Notes from the LEFF Forum 2017, Part 1. The conference titled Resistance was held in New York City June 2nd through June 4th, and it looked at questions of power, strategy, and tactics as the resistance to Donald Trump rises. The focus of many panels this year was on moving beyond Trump into an examination of the system which produced him. Part 1 of Notes from the LEFF Forum is drawn from a panel called Reality Check. Why now, more than ever, it's time for radical resistance and a green-left collaboration to move it forward. With Chris Hedges, Medea Benjamin, Dr. Jill Stein, and Margaret Kimberlin.
Frankly, if we don't change this system as a species, we're not going to be here.
Chris Hedges, author, teacher, critic, former foreign correspondent for nearly two decades. He writes for Truth Dig. His most recent book is Wages of Rebellion, The Moral Imperative of Revolt. He lays out where we are politically. He says Trump is the symptom, not the disease, that for the last 30 years we've had a corporate kleptocracy, a rule by thieves, beginning with what he says is damage from Bill Clinton, and that now we are in a state of deep paralysis.
We're in a state of stasis, there's no movement. And the deep state has crippled even Trump. I have obviously find Trump as repugnant. I mean, he's like something coughed up out of the Grand Guignol. But he the whole kind of framing of this as that he's a stooge of Russia, or that Russia was the one that spun the elections, is an absurdity when you think about it, when you parse it. And let me throw in for, because I did hear this kind of talk at the LEFF Forum in the past, it is as absurd as the idea that Ralph Nader elected George W. Bush. So look at what they're saying. And of course, it's just the media is just bombarding you from the repugnant Rachel Maddow on down. The idea that I guess tens or maybe hundreds of thousands of Hillary Clinton supporters woke up one morning and read the John Podesta emails and said, "That's it. I'm voting for Donald Trump." That's kind of what they're telling you. Or if you read the 7 pages in the Director of National Intelligence report dedicated to RT America, where I have a show, and the power of RT America, which, let's be frank, no one watches, convinced massive numbers of Americans to vote for the Green Party. That's really it. And it is as demagogic as what Trump is doing towards Muslims, but it's demagoguery from the liberal elites. And it doesn't face the fundamental reality. The reason the Democratic Party got shellacked, and not just in the presidential election, is because they betrayed working men and women. They thrust a knife into the back of the working class. And, you know, if I hear one more time about the Clintons being a friend of African Americans, I teach in a prison, and I can tell you 80% of my students wouldn't be there but for Bill and Hillary Clinton. No, I'm not joking. Seriously, the 1994 Omnibus Crime Bill, what did it do? It exploded the prison population. I was up visiting Mumia Abu-Jamal, our great revolutionary, one of the most courageous figures in America, and one of our most important intellectuals. And he was looking around the room going, you know, none of these people would be here but for the Clintons. And that selling out came with an ideological, a use of traditional liberal terms that became inverted. So for instance, what did a post-racial America become? It became about a black president who was Cornel West served as a black mascot for Wall Street. What does feminism become? I mean, I come out of Andrea Dworkin, who is a feminist for me, and a real one, and Dworkin said that feminism is about empowering oppressed women. It is not about a woman CEO or a woman president. And what's happened, and this I just finished teaching a semester at Princeton. What's happened in the universities and in the liberal elites, if they have totally bought this mantra that we will color code elitist institutions, meanwhile, poor people of color and the working class and will be thrown under the bus. And that's precisely what's happened. I just want to end by talking a little bit about the white working class, which has aligned behind Trump, which is angry, racist, xenophobic. All of these things are true. However, the pain of the white working class is real, and it's legitimate. And we are going to have to begin to build bridges to people who think differently than us and perhaps even say things that we disagree with. I come from rural Maine, and I can assure you many of my relatives, who I love very much, there were things that came out of their mouth that were highly inappropriate. They were poor, lower class workers. And my rule was, you can say whatever you want when you go home, but you can't say that in front of me. But I still love you and I care about you. And we have to, and I think Nader has been pushing this and Nader is right, we have to begin to organize and we're gonna have to build, we're gonna have to align ourselves or build movements, because at this point, I think it's good that we, you know, run a Green Party candidate, I'm all for it, but I think at this point it is, I gave a talk on Gramsci last night, it is kind of like Gramsci trying to organize the Communist Party under Mussolini's fascism. They put so many roadblocks in that it's, Trotsky actually writes a lament for Gramsci for trying to do this. And I think that we're going to have to begin to find our strength by building a consensus around issues that people care about within their communities that are in many ways seen as apolitical but are not apolitical. That is raising the minimum wage. That is blocking fracking from destroying your water system. That is stopping Betsy DeVos from destroying your public school. And it is going to come through acts of mass civil disobedience. And there's Ralph Pointer, who's led the life we should all lead, doing it. I don't think you ever got arrested for resisting arrest. I think you got arrested for assaulting police officers. Am I right about that, Ralph? Not the same thing. Don't believe that. That guy was a boxer in Pittsburgh. So, but I think that's it. They're going to get nasty and they're going to get rough, because the Democratic Party is not going to change. They are wedded. Schumer as an alternative. The bag man for Wall Street for the Democratic Party, and we saw with the 200 protesters at the inauguration, they are going to come down. We saw it with the brave water resistors and water defenders in Standing Rock. It's going to be dirty and it's going to be ugly, but it's the fight of our lives, because frankly, if we don't change this system as a species, we're not going to be here. Thank you.
Author and critic Chris Hedges. You're listening to Notes from the Left Forum, Part 1, speakers from the Reality Check panel looking at a green-left collaboration moving forward. Next up, Code Pink's Medea Benjamin, also co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange. She says it's disheartening to see how hard the Democrats work to prop up the empire. Medea Benjamin's newest book is Saudi Arabia, Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the U.S.-Saudi Connection.
I wrote this book recently on Saudi Arabia because, you know why I did it actually? Because every year I would go out to AIPAC, the Israel lobby, and we would be out there fighting with these people going into AIPAC, literally getting beaten up every single year by the people going into AIPAC, and the police would never protect us. I'm Jewish, so other, you know, Jewish people going into AIPAC would say, why don't you do something about those Arab regimes? Why are you always picking on Israel? So I thought, all right, maybe there's some truth to that, you know? and I started researching and doing work around Saudi Arabia. And it was amazing to me to find that not only has the U.S. since the 1930s, the time that the Saudi Empire was created, been supporting this regime, but it was really under Obama that they became the number one purchaser of U.S. weapons. Under Obama, 42 separate weapons deals under Obama. Did the Republicans say, oh, why are we giving to this horrible, you know, Arab Wahhabist, intolerant, misogynist regime that's spreading terrorism around the world? No, they were all for weapons sales. Did the progressive Democrats stand up and say, why are we giving to this misogynist, intolerant, blah, blah, blah? Not at all. And so you saw both parties doing the most unthinkable thing if you really want national security for the United States, which is supporting the very country that was spreading extremist ideology that forms the foundation of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And so even today when Trump goes to Saudi Arabia and all of a sudden some Democrats are saying, ooh, what's he doing selling all these weapons to the Saudis? The majority of them in Congress, you know, they have the right 30 days after weapons deal is announced to stand up and say no to that deal. You know how hard it is for us to get even the majority of the progressive caucus in Congress to say no to weapons sales to Saudi Arabia, because not only is it supporting this repressive regime internally, but because they're using the weapons to decimate the people of Yemen. Absolute catastrophe what's going on in Yemen. And we can't even get the majority of progressive Democrats to say no. Now that is shameful. That is absolutely unacceptable. And I want to give another example, and I see my comrade here, Arielle Gold from Code Pink, who does our Israel-Palestine work, because she is braving going into Congress to try to get them to do the simplest thing that you can imagine. You know, there's the whole thing, progressive and everything but Palestine. Well, you know, it's... You can't find people in Congress who are good on Palestine. And she had to work from May until, from October of last year until May, to get one person in Congress to stand up and say they would initiate a letter. It's just a letter, it's not even a bill, saying that the Gandhi of Palestine, Issa Amro, known as the Gandhi of Palestine because he is supportive and definitive about using nonviolent tactics. He has been given awards around the world. He's recognized by the European Union. He's brought here actually by the State Department. He says he is facing 18 charges. In a military court that has over 99% conviction rate. And we are trying to get somebody in Congress to stand up and say to Tillerson, maybe the Israelis should reconsider this. That's what they're asking for. It took months to get somebody to do it. And our goal is to get 25 members of Congress. 25. You know how many members of Congress we have, right? 435. We want to get just 25 to sign on to this letter. And that will be an incredible victory if we get those 25. That's how pathetic it is. That's how horrible it is. That's how awful these Democrats are. And so, of course, we need a new party. Of course we need a new party. Now, the question and the discussion, I think, is what is that party? Is it the Green Party? And we certainly have a fabulous representative of the Green Party right here in Jill Stein. Is it another party, a new party? Is it a coalition of parties? I don't know. I think it's an important discussion to have. But when I look at Europe and I look at other places around the world, I see new parties coming in with fresh ideas and sweeping the public imagination. And I think maybe it is a new party that we need. I don't know. I just say that we need something outside the two-party system, and that is for sure. What do we do in the meantime? We support the parties, the independent, the non-mainstream parties that do exist. What else do? We create more coalitions of coalitions. We create more networks that we can have both people involved in independent party politics and people who are the activists on the street. Those kind of coalitions have to form. I might be a minority in this room, but I also think we have to work with people who call themselves and consider themselves progressive Democrats, because I think a lot of those people have many of the same values that we do, and we do need to work with them. I also think, see, there's some of us in the room. Didn't get a thunderous applause there, but I got a couple. I also think that when Chris said about civil disobedience, we are not doing enough to show our opposition. I love marches. I go to marches all the time. I say a protest today keeps the doctor away. I'm always going to protest. But let me tell you, walking around on a Saturday and a Sunday in a circle, coming back to the same place you started when everything else is closed, that's really not like super impactful. So, I would much rather see 100 people going into Congress and doing a sit-in in the lobby of the Hart Building and taping over that building. So raise your hand if you have done civil disobedience for justice here in this room. So that should be everybody. And I would say now under Trump, it has to be all of us in this room and a whole lot more. A couple of final points I want to make. One is that our wins are going to be on the local level, but we have so much, not only has the right taken over the White House and the Congress, but look at two-thirds of the governorships, look at two-thirds of the legislatures, look at so many of the courts on the local level. Where are we? We have not done nearly enough. We can name a couple of cities. We can name some, you know, successes that we have at the local level, but we have to do much, much more at electing progressives at the local level, at doing good coalition building at the local level, at forcing city councils to pass resolutions from $15 an hour to sanctuary cities to say hell no to another $54 billion for the Pentagon, whatever, those kinds of things. We have to have more and more of those that we're forcing our city councils and our mayors to do. And I think also we have to, while we are taking down this system, we have to be building up the alternatives. And I'm so glad that there are so many sessions here at the Left Forum that talk about everything from worker co-ops to credit unions to public banks and all of the pieces that we're creating of a new economy. But there is also the way that we live. I always thought that living in a nuclear family was kind of a silly way to live. But we have not created enough alternatives where we really have different lifestyles that are so appealing for people that no matter what their ideology is, they want to come and be in our alternative lifestyles. And it is beautiful to see out of so much of the problems in places like Detroit, those kinds of things popping up with beautiful urban gardens, with communities coming together. I'm spending more time in Miami right now because we're part of a community that's taken over a whole block in Little Haiti and is refusing gentrification and has turned it into a farm. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place to be and feel part of community. So we need these kind of things to keep us together, what we at Cold Pink call the local peace economy. And finally, what I want to say is that it sometimes gets very hard working in the left because it feels sometimes like a circular firing squad. And we are constantly backbiting each other. We are constantly saying that somebody is not politically correct enough or doesn't do this enough or whatever it is. You know what we need in our movement? We need a lot more kindness. We need a lot more gentleness. We need to be a lot more loving with each other, tolerant of each other. Chris said that he has relatives who are Trump supporters. I have lots of relatives who are Trump supporters. Every time I come to New York and stay with them, it's Trump supporters. I love them as well, and I work with them and I talk to them. But within even our non-Trump supporters, our community, we have to be much, much, much kinder to each other. So those are my final words. It's with love and with kindness that we will build a much stronger movement. Thank you.
Code Pink's Madea Benjamin. Next up, Dr. Jill Stein, 2016 Green Party presidential candidate, physician, and environmental activist.
In my view, Donald Trump is not the one to be afraid of, nor is Rachel Maddow and MSNBC, or Hillary Clinton for that matter. What we have to be afraid of is not standing up and taking our destiny back into our own hands, because we are the only ones who will save us. And I think in the same way you can say kindly and gently to a friend who is trapped in an abusive personal relationship, that we got a problem here with the Democratic Party. And that this faith in the Democratic Party, the defense of the Democratic Party, is really contrary to a reality check. And that was what we had in mind when we talked, at least what I had in mind, when we thought about calling this a reality check. A reality check about where do we stand in terms of our survival, in terms of fascism, the hope that democracy will survive, that our planet will survive, that our economy will survive, that racial justice will somehow, you know, be resurrected out of our prison system and out of our drug wars and out of the battered economies of the African American communities, not just in this country but all around the world. You know, we've got a critical problem here. And we're not going to get out of here by running through the same paces. And for those who continue to put their hope and faith in the Democratic Party, I think, you know, in the same way, if you had a friend in an abusive relationship and their life is at risk, it's really important. You owe it to them to at least have a gentle discussion. And, you know, you can't take people where they're not going to go. But you do owe them an honest discussion and just an honest sharing. And I think any accounting of the facts here is that we can't keep doing what we've been doing. And I think that means, you know, that doesn't make it easy. It's not easy to develop a new political party. And let me say that, you know, the Green Party I see as sort of the foundation because it is a national party. If you have not been involved in establishing a new national party, then you have a very rude awakening about what it is like to establish a new political party in the context of 21st century America. Everything is tilted against you. It is not easy, but we do have a very hard-won foundation, which is open. It's open for joining, for discussion, even for, you know, a new name, if we had to entertain. I find so often this boils down to the name, because our agendas have actually converged. And this has been really clear over the last, I'd say, 5 years, that our agendas have come together. We've been working together with the other socialist, progressive, peace and freedom parties. And it's hard to find the difference in terms of our agendas. There may be small differences about strategy and tactics, but those get smaller by the day. So I think this is a really good news story, that we have a springboard, we really have a perfect storm, and in fact, we really have no alternative. That is the only way forward. In which we are going to get out of here alive. And it's happening much faster than any of us would have dreamed, for better and for worse. And I think Donald Trump, you know, in an odd and ironic way, Donald Trump is sort of the silver lining that makes us see, as Chris was saying, he is the symptom, he is not the disease, he is the product. Remember, most people who voted for Donald Trump were not voting for him. This was shown by many studies. They weren't for him, they were against what the Democrats have to offer, which tells us more of the neoliberal agenda. And we saw, both by the sabotage of Bernie Sanders, we saw by what happened at the DNC, where the reform agenda was beaten back. The ban on corporate funding was defeated, where Keith Ellison was defeated because Barack Obama created a candidate to oppose him and to push him back. And then, if that wasn't enough, then the California Democratic Party, like 3 weeks ago, also defeated their progressive reform candidate in the one state that really had the best organized progressive movement within the Democratic Party. How much longer are we going to wait? We got 2 feet over the cliff. We are in a free fall. If we get out and we organize in a social movement as well as in a political movement, we can take our future back. We can create an America and a world that works for all of us, that puts people, planet, and peace over profit. We have the power to create that world. If we don't do it, no one will. I hope you will be a part of that fight. Thank you.
Dr. Jill Stein, 2016 Green Party presidential candidate. Margaret Kimberly is next. Her Freedom Writer column appears weekly in Black Agenda Report. She says it's important not to be fooled.
We're living in a time of great contradiction. Trump symbolizes many of those. But the world is in, he's president because of these crises. The crisis of legitimacy, which delegitimized elite consensus, which is why they go on and on about fake news, because people are clearly, for many reasons, not believing it anymore. But the crisis is economic. The capitalist system is under great stress. It provides fewer and fewer benefits to the masses of people. It's on its last legs, but that is also what makes it so dangerous. And it explains everything from the Brexit vote to the heightened imperialist imperative. It explains the whipped up frenzy of Russophobia and the attacks on a right-wing president by the elites and by the deep state. Ever since Trump took the US out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and we've been hearing a lot of, and we should, about the danger of environmental collapse and even mass extinction. But at the same time, I think we need to point out that this Paris Agreement was not everything that we were told that it was. Of course, I don't agree with Trump that climate change is a hoax. I don't think having a green economy is going to hurt the economy or hurt workers. But it's also true that the accord was a ruse by which the rich countries gave the appearance of doing something about climate change when they were not. Just to mention just one problematic aspect of the agreement, it actually permitted the world temperature to rise even more. So here we are, we're trying to escape all the traps and all the contradictions that go along with them. The political trap that we live with here in the United States is this two-party duopoly of the Republicans and the Democrats. And what we have in essence is one far right party and one center right party. And the system is set up to exclude third parties or to relegate them to irrelevancy or even spoiler status. And I'd like to talk about something else, election integrity, about voter suppression. Hillary Clinton lost key states, I'm sure of it, because of voter suppression. But she has said nothing about, she finally did a couple days ago. She and other Democrats, the Congressional Black Caucus, have said nothing about that. And John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis, civil rights icon, I don't know how you get designated that, but he said Trump was not the legitimate president, and when asked why, did he say it was because of voter suppression? No. Did he say it's because of voter ID laws? No. Did he say it's because of the Electoral College? Nope. He said it's because of Russia. And he and the rest of the Congressional Black Caucus don't even talk about black people anymore. So this is where we are now. And that, I believe, makes the case for not apologizing by cutting them loose. And by working together, by running candidates for office, I don't think we really have a choice. We live in a world where 8 billionaires have as much money as half the poor people, something like that. And the climate crisis, which is real and severe, which is going to continue even if the United States stayed in that climate pact. So I say We have to stand our ground and stay the course and keep doing what we've been doing. Thank you so much.
And you've been listening to Notes from the Left Forum 2017 Part 1, a panel drawn from a conference titled Resistance, held in New York City June 2nd through June 4th. We heard from Chris Hedges, Medea Benjamin, Dr. Jill Stein, and Margaret Kimberly. Linda Perry, WBAI News, Pacifica Radio, New York.